Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 353. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, you ready to kick off our ranking series?
Yeah, it's the best time of the year, at least from an off-season standpoint, I guess, because we get to break down the rankings, we get to break down position by position, how we value, and it's really good to kind of dig in a bit. And it kind of challenges you in a way to really look and say, do I value this guy higher than this guy? Such, you know, and then for like a dynasty format, like who would I really have ahead? So, you know, I think that doing these is, you know, good. And sometimes even during the episode, there's been times in the past when, you know, I've completely changed an evaluation of a player, like during the episode, or yep. Not changed the evaluation, but changed my rank of a player where it's like, yeah, I think this guy slots better here. So, yeah, it's a good time for sure.
Yeah, no, I've done the same too, and that's why I recommend anybody that wants to do like any sort of rankings, especially when it comes to like dynasty and even more so prospects, to break it down any way you can, especially in the off season. Like, break it down by team, break it down by position. You know, throw some age filters on there and break it down by age or something like that. Any way that kind of take a big set of data and make it a little smaller. That way you can really look at and see, like Chris said, do I like, you know, player A ahead of player B or vice versa? You can get kind of hard and sometimes you get lost in a bigger, you know, 500 plus player spreadsheet. So breaking it down is always a great exercise for us to see, kind of test to make sure our rankings are where we want them to be. And we always make tweaks along the way. And it's fun going through this as we're doing this content on our personal platforms right now. Chris is going through teams. I'm going through positions. And so it's always fun doing that and getting that content out there. And we'll be doing this for the next, near 2 months. We're doing every position, 2 episodes a week. The Monday or early week episode, which will be mostly on Mondays, will be the prospect version. And then the later week episode, usually on Fridays, will be the dynasty version. We're lining up some guests along the way. No guests today, but we'll have plenty of guests throughout the series over the next 2 months. And we're kicking it off with the catcher position, of course, today. Catcher prospects will be the episode today. Before we get into that, though, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter and Blue Sky. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB on Twitter, and at Chris Clegg on Blue Sky. And I am at Eric Cross, MLB on both. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com. Again, we're doing a lot of prospect and dynasty rankings right now and plenty of other stuff, so make sure to check out both of those platforms. And make sure to check out all the great content over on Rotoballer. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package, baseball, football, basketball, whatever your little heart desires. Rotoballer has it. Over at rotoballer.com. All right, so we're going through our top 25 catcher prospect rankings today. We'll discuss certain players. A lot of interesting names at the catcher position right now. But Chris, let's start out with our top 10. Who you got?
All right. So at the top is Samuel Basayo, followed by Dalton Rushing, Moises Ballesteros, Kyle Teal, and Thyron Lorenzo at 5. And then followed by 6 through 10, Drake Baldwin, Jefferson Caro, Ethan Salas, Augustin, I always mess up his name. It's Augustin or Augustin Ramirez and Eduardo Tait around out the top 10.
All right, so I have the same top two, which I think is pretty standard across the industry right now. That's Sammy Basayo and Dalton Rushing. I have Augustin Ramirez 3, Kyle Teal 4, Moises Ballesteros 5, Drake Baldwin 6, Harry Ford 7, Eduardo Tait 8, Edgar Caro 9, and Thyron Lorenzo 10. And we just want to throw those little caveats in there that Josue Briseño, who still is catcher eligible now, though I think it's a foregone conclusion he's moving to first base, it would have him number 6 right now, or number 6 or 7. He's right in that, you know, Baldwin range for me. Chris, where would you have Briseño?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd be right around there as well. He's a like top 60-ish prospect for me, which is
yep, same.
Kind of like in that range. I think he'd fall behind Baldwin around Jefferson Caro. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of intrigue there for sure. But, you know, at this point, like, he's a first baseman. I mean, he's too big for catcher. Like, he's like 6'6 at this point. And the team has kind of shown that they're going to go that route of him being a first baseman. So wouldn't expect him to catch anymore moving forward.
Yeah, watch out, Spencer Torkelson. You got Josue Briseño coming in hot, coming off a AFL MVP award. Though he didn't get the Offensive Player of the Year, though, which you got to wonder. Maybe they have some like caveat where you have to, two different players have to win those two awards, because it makes no sense to me. Saw the Offensive Player of the Year first, and it was Nico Cavadas, who, you know, had a great AFL showing, don't get me wrong, but I was like, how is it not Briseño? But at least you get the MVP. But I wonder if you have to have two different players when, I don't know if that's something they do. I don't know. But yeah, he was absolutely dominant out there. But that kind of leads us into our first little topic here. You're talking about how Briseño is moving off the position. The top two names on both of our rankings, Dalton Rushing and Sammy Basayo, both might move off the position as well. Basayo potentially to first base, Dalton Rushing probably to the outfield, a corner outfield, which he already started doing a bit down the stretch in AAA last season. So, Chris, I think a lot of people are probably wondering, how long do both of these guys retain eligibility? Do we think it's just for this year and they make their, you know, permanent swaps to each of those positions I mentioned? Or do you think there's a chance that one or both of these two might be able to, you know, hang on to eligibility for a little bit, maybe in a backup role to Will Smith and Dalton and Adley Rutschman?
With Rushing, at least, like, you know, I think the move to the outfield is one that they were just trying to get his bat in the lineup as soon as possible. I mean, this is a case where Rushing's been a pretty elite bat since he debuted. I mean, the ex-Wobicon for his minor league career is just absurdly high. And I think that the Dodgers know that. The Dodgers know the skills he brings to the plate. And sooner than later, they want this bat in their lineup. And that was the avenue to go. Now, I think that obviously you've got Will Smith there, and Will Smith's going to be there for the long term. Smith is 30 years old at this point. Smith has seen some decline in his game, which I think he's someone that catches a lot. Like, when you stack him up against other catchers, he's behind the plate as much, if not more, than any other catcher in baseball. So I think at this point in his career, he could use the added days off. I feel pretty good about Rushing catching 2 days a week and also spending time in the outfield in a corner spot where he's going to play enough, I think. You know, unless the Dodgers continue just to bring in players. Right now, I mean, there's openings. They've got Altman and Andy Páez penciled in the outfield. I do think Teoscar Hernandez comes back. I don't think Juan Soto goes there. I mean, who knows at this point? But I do believe that there's opportunities for Rushing early in 2025. And I'm taking those shots because I believe in the bat. So, you know, while I don't think rushing's fully going to move off the position. He has continued to work on his defense, and he's progressed. And there was an interview with him on Dodger Heads where just recently where he was talking about that catcher defense that he'd been working on this offseason is going to continue to work on. I look at rushing and think that this is a team that could use his bat in the lineup. Obviously, they just extended Tommy Edman as well. Edman can play a couple spots. He can play short. He can play second. How long's the leash on Gavin Lux? There are still some questions on how rushing could fit in this team. With Basayo, I think it's going to be interesting because the Orioles do have a little bit more of a logjam, at least where Basayo can play catcher and first base. But I would not be shocked if they make space. This bat is electric. I mean, we know Basayo can mash. He got to AAA last year as a 19-year-old. I think that's obviously pretty notable, or at least in his age 19 season. I do think he turned 20 around the time he was called up at the end of the season. He turned 20 August 13th. But you look at this team, and obviously they've got Adley behind the plate. They've got to find a spot for Kobe Mayo as well. Does Mayo play third? Does Mayo play first? I think that's still kind of a question mark. Is Mayo traded? I think that that's still a real possibility. I would not be shocked if Kobe Mayo was moved, but maybe the more realistic option is Ryan Mountcastle is moved. If Ryan Mountcastle is traded, there's some opportunities here. You know, Basayo and Mayo could spend time at first base. Basayo can catch on days Adley does not. There's some DH opportunities as well. Like you look at Ryan O'Hearn, I would be shocked if O'Hearn repeats the season he had last year, which was pretty decent. O'Hearn's back and he's going to find a spot. They're going to get his bat in the lineup. But yeah, I think there's opportunities for Basayo, you know, multiple ways. You look last year, he caught 56 games. He was at first 32 and he DH'd 35 games. So kind of getting him some reps at all spots. I'm still unsure how it shakes out, but I do think that this is a bat you don't keep out of the lineup. You hope that Basayo catches one day a week in the long term to keep that eligibility, but obviously the bat is exceptional with both these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the ones, obviously you want that catcher eligibility with them because they're so phenomenal with the bat that they could be, you know, elite catching options for fantasy. Even as, you know, even if they both do lose it, let's say, you know, outfield for only for rushing and first base only for Basayo, they would still be phenomenal bats and above average bats at those positions too. So, you know, they're still going to be very valuable regardless of what their eligibility is. But like I said, you want that catcher eligibility. And yeah, I don't think either are going to fully lose it within the next like 2-3 years. You know, maybe 4-5 years down the road. All right, we could be talking something different. But by that point, Will Smith will be 34. You know, Mountcastle's with Baltimore. I just looked through. He's ARB eligible through the 26 season. So he'll be a free agent in 2027. But he's also missed, you know, 40 to 45 games each of the last 2 years. He's never played 150. So a little bit of durability questions there with Mountcastle. Oh, you know, O'Hearn's been a pretty solid player for them, you know, in the role that he is in. So, you know, he'll probably get his, you know, playing time a bit as well. So it's kind of hard to see. I see an easier path, assuming they don't go out, you know, Dodgers don't go out and get more guys like Soto, for instance, or whatever. But assuming they don't go out and get more bats, I see a bit of an easier path to playing time initially for a Dalton Rushing as opposed to a Basayo. Because, you know, look, it took, you know, Kobe Mayo was in AAA for most of the season. Yeah, he got a couple cups of coffee here and there and didn't really do much with them. But look how long it took, you know, him to get into the lineup, Kierstad to get into the lineup, you know, even Holiday. And still got to get, you know, if Holiday's playing second, but it's Westy at third. So where does Mayo go? Still a lot of moving parts there with Baltimore. But, you know, just looking at these two guys, they're easily my 1-2. Like, I think they're in a tier by themselves for me. There's a pretty solid drop-off to the next tier of guys in my rankings, at least. I mean, you know, look at rushing. You know, Chris alluded to how the bat has been so good in the minor leagues. In 233 minor league games, rushing has a 410 OBP and a 520 slug. I mean, this guy is going to be an asset in OBP leagues while hitting for a respectable average as well and providing plenty of power. You know, if he gets enough reps in the outfield, you could be looking at like a 30-homer bat. I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at here with Dalton rushing. Bisaccia is going to be one of those high average, you know, good power guy. He won't be a massive power guy, but guy that can hit you, you know, 275, 280, 20 plus home runs a year as well. So, yeah, these two are easily the top two, and I'm not fully worried about them losing the eligibility in the short term. But the name that I think we were the farthest apart on, and I'm not surprised because this guy has become increasingly more difficult to value and rank every year, is Harry Ford. I still have him in the back end of my top 10. What did I say I have him? Was I 8th with him? 7th with him. And Chris, as you, I'm not going to give it away yet, but Chris does not have him in his top 10, and we have a pretty sizable gap here between the two of us. So, Chris, you know, what are your thoughts on Harry Ford? I mean, he was one of the top catching prospects in the game for the last couple of years, you know, 2022, 2023, especially as he was showing, you know, developing power, good athleticism, obviously walking a ton. You know, that still was there. He's still stealing bags. He had 35 steals last year, still walking a ton, walk rate well over 10%, but it's really the bat that has not progressed. Like, the approach has been good, and, you know, stealing bags has been good, but only had 7 home runs last year. Yeah, he was in a pitcher's park, sure, but kind of didn't take that next step progression-wise with the bat that a lot of people were looking for. So kind of got to wonder, how good is he going to be with the bat? Can he be that impact bat that he projected to be in the lower minors? I think that's kind of what's causing the wide range of rankings and evaluations on Ford right now. So, Chris, where are you at on Ford right now? He's pretty polarizing.
Yeah, I think so. I think the caveat here first is that he played his games in a very pitcher-friendly environment, Arkansas, Double A. So while it is a hitter-friendly league, playing the home games there in Arkansas are tough. It is also worth noting that when you look, he actually, you know, he put up a better average at home, but a 697 OPS at home and a 787 OPS on the road. One home run at home, 6 on the road. He did have quite a few more plate appearances on the road, but still not enough to really kind of change that home run deficit there. It's interesting to look at. You know, obviously Ford shows some good things. He doesn't chase often. He takes walks. He stole 35 bases. That's kind of crazy. I'm not expecting that to really be a thing long-term. Like, looking at the profile, like, yeah, I think that it's helpful that he can steal bases, but I think the expectations are probably not that of someone that's going to steal that many, maybe 10 to 15, which is a nice boost at the catcher position. But we've seen like him not really take the steps forward you'd want to see with the hit tool. I actually believe the hit tool's kind of below average. He's not progressed contact-wise. You just look and it's like, okay, like, I'd like to see more here. And he just hasn't shown it. Also, the power has not developed. You obviously see that in the home run total, but the EVs are kind of just meh. It's, you know, you want to see more at this point in his career. He is kind of a smaller frame. He's not going to be a huge source of power. You hope that he gets to be like a average game power type. And while I do think that there is potential for him to be a 15 to 20 home run bat, like, we haven't quite seen it yet. It's still something that we'd like to see developed. And I think given the catcher landscape, like, we look at all the catching prospects and how good the landscape is, it's just hard to put Ford pretty high for me right now. Though, you know, I do look at the profile and say there are some intriguing things for fantasy purposes. Also, I'm a bit concerned about the hit tool. And I'm concerned where the power winds up long term. Is the home run total a product of him playing in Double A Arkansas? Probably. We'll see what the output looks like next year in Triple A, so that should be interesting. Assuming he goes there, he'll be 22 before the start of next season. I am kind of curious to see where that goes. But with those caveats, home park issues and such, I still think there's some concerns contact-wise and underlying power-wise. So, you know, I'm just a little bit lower on Harry Ford at this point, but still have some things to like about him.
Yeah, there's definitely some intrigue, definitely some red flags. Like you mentioned, yeah, like, the would he have had more home runs if he played, you know, in any other park this year? Sure. You know, like you mentioned, you only had the one home run at home, but the EVs, you know, those don't really change. Like, those are still a little bit concerning. I mean, they weren't like bad, but like you mentioned, they're pretty meh. They weren't inspiring by any means. And you just got to wonder, like, where does the bat wind up? I mean, there's still that potential long-term outcome where he's, you know, in the mid-teens for home runs, you know, low to mid-teens for steals, and with a higher OBP, and yeah, probably a lower average, but if you play OBP formats, definitely gets a nice bump there, because I think this was the first year he had an OBP under 400. Yeah, and it was still 377, which is still very good. You know, for his career, 404 OBP was 410 in 2023 and 425 in 2022. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how he looks in AAA. I'm assuming he spent, you know, he was in rookie ball in 21, full year in low A 2022, full year in high A 2023, and then full year in double A last year. So he spent the entire season at every level. So I'm assuming he'll get the jump to AAA to start 2025 in Tacoma. You know, much better hitter environment there. So we'll see. You know, see if that power starts coming back. I think this is going to be, I don't like using make or break year, but one of those like really telling years for Harry Ford in 2025. I mean, okay, is the bat going to be at least decent, or is he really going to be carried by his speed and on-base ability? So we shall see. But yeah, that's the reason why, I mean, even for me, I'm still a little bit higher than most on Ford, I'd say, and I kind of always have been, but it's getting really hard to rank him, and I don't even know if I like this ranking. There's a massive glob and a lot of different types of profiles in this range. So he's become very, very hard to rank. So at this point, he might be a little overrated, but we shall see in 2025. But one that, you know, on the other side of the spectrum that I believe is, you know, actually, I don't believe, I know this guy is pretty underrated, and that's Drake Baldwin from Chris's Atlanta Braves, a guy that might see a little bit more time at the major league level in 2025 with Travis d'Arnaud going out west with the Los Angeles Angels. And I put out a couple polls from the Toolshed Twitter account on Sunday. And the first one was, which of these four catcher prospects would you rather have long-term for fantasy? And I put in there Kyle Teal, Moises Ballesteros, Drake Baldwin, and the Harry Ford. I thought there'd be a pretty interesting group of four there. Teal currently, I mean, there's still 20 hours left in the poll, so this will change. But Teal currently is at 40.8%. And then Ballesteros, 25.6%. Harry Ford, 21%. And Drake Baldwin, only 12.7%, which is easily last in that poll. But look at what Baldwin did last year. And he had a pretty solid 2023 as well. 2024 between AA Mississippi and AAA Gwinnett. / 276, 370, 423, 19 doubles, 16 home runs, 72 walks to 95 strikeouts. Chris, you know, the EVs were good with Baldwin. You know, this is a guy that is a very, very good hitter, you know, a very advanced bat, and one that I easily can say I think is major league ready right now. We'll see how much time he gets with Atlanta in 2025, but I think Baldwin is one of the more undervalued, kind of like top, you know, 100, 150 caliber prospects in baseball right now, and not just at this position. I think he's a great buy right now.
Yeah, you know, he's made major strides in his career. And the thing about Atlanta is you look at the minor league numbers, and their parks are very bad. They're very pitcher friendly, from Augusta in the single A level to Rome in high A and even Mississippi in double A. And it plays more neutral, maybe a little hitter friendly in Gwinnett. I'll be interested to see how the new AA in Columbus plays. But aside the point, you kind of see the difference with, you know, a lot of their hitters that make the jumps. You have Ignacio Alvarez, he got AAA, home runs start showing up. Baldwin gets AAA, home runs start showing up. But the exit velocity data was really good. Average exit velocity north of 92. The 90th percentile, 106. Like, those things are absolutely going to play. Baldwin makes plenty of contact, you know, overall and especially in the zone. It's low chase rates. I think that the Braves kind of showed their hand too, where they let Travis d'Arnaud go, who has kind of been a cog in that lineup for years. It's always a thing where, oh, they got Sean Murphy, like he's going to be the guy, but d'Arnaud always played, and d'Arnaud always showed up in big moments, but now he's not there. Murphy has been hurt a lot, so I think that there's opportunities for Baldwin. Chadwick Tromp ain't going to be the starter on this team if Sean Murphy gets hurt. Drake Baldwin's going to get the chance. I think he's ready. I think that the Braves know that. He's going to be 23 years old next year on opening day. You know, the bat to ball, the power, the good walk rates. He checks a lot of boxes from what you want to see. He's a fine defender. Like, he's not a standout catcher, but he's good enough. Like, he's got a good enough arm. He's good enough receiver. He threw out 20% of base runners in 2024. That's about average. So you hope that it can translate to the majors. There's good stories about how Baldwin has good, you know, good rapport with his pitchers. That obviously helps managing the staffs, you know, with good defense. That'll play. I think Baldwin's more than ready at this point. I think that I'm a little surprised that he's underrated. I was a little surprised by that poll that, you know, Harry Ford was ahead of him, but yeah, especially given Baldwin's progression and the fact that he's MLB ready at this point, I get that the name value is not particularly there, not a high draft pick or anything of that nature. So I'm curious. I think he pairs really well with Murphy in Atlanta this year, and I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, and as we've seen, Murphy's had a hard time staying on the field at times as well. So, but shout out to Travis d'Arnaud, who might be one of the best like backup catchers of all time. Like, that dude is just, he's just there every year, does his thing. You know, when you need him to start a little bit, he does so admirably. You know, Travis d'Arnaud is just a great catcher to have. But you can get rid of him, you know, or let him go, I should say, when you have a guy like Drake Baldwin that's major league ready. So, yeah, I think Baldwin is easily a top 100 prospect right now for me. I think he's a guy that's going to be hit for decent average, hit for power, and we'll see, you know, the playing time. That's still the question mark. But I think I would be surprised if he didn't get like 250 plus at bats in the majors this year. But we shall see. All right, let's move on to our rest of our top 25 rankings here. But to quickly recap the top 10 for Chris, it was Bisayo, Rushing, Ballesteros, Teal, Lorenzo, Baldwin, Jefferson Cairo, Ethan Salas, Augustin Ramirez, and Eduardo Tait. I had Bisayo, Rushing, Ramirez, Teal, Ballesteros, Baldwin, Ford, Tait, Edgar Cairo, and Theron Lorenzo at 10. So 11 through 25, I have Adrian Del Castillo, Ethan Salas, Blake Mitchell, Alfredo Duno, Jefferson Cairo, Carter Jensen, Ramon Ramirez, a lot of Kansas City names in this part of the rankings, Dylan Dingler, Drew Romo, Creed Williams, Cooper Engle, Daniel Suzak, Yohanfran Garcia, Dominic Keegan, and Malcolm Moore. Chris, who you got 11 through 25?
All right, I've got Edgar Cairo at 11, Adrian Del Castillo 12, Blake Mitchell, Carter Jensen, Alfredo Duno to round out the 15. 16 through 20 is Ramon Ramirez, Dylan Dingler, Jimmy Crooks, Harry Ford, Cooper Engle, and then 21 through 25 being Rafael Flores, Edgelin Perez, Walker Yannick, Joe Mack, and Ingelth Urena.
Every time I see the name Joe Mack, I think of that song Return of the Mack from the 90s. Always makes me get that song stuck in my head. But all right, let's start off with, you know, I think obviously the biggest name. Well, you had him inside your top 10. I had him just outside. A guy we could have talked about in either segment, but let's talk a little Ethan Salas. Obviously, people that know me over the last couple of years, I was screaming from the rooftops that he was overrated for fantasy purposes. But now I think the perceived value has swung the other way. It's has swung low enough where I think he might be a decent buy right now. I'm not like running out to acquire him, don't get me wrong, but I think the value is low enough where, you know, depending on what it costs me, you know, I might take a shot on Ethan Salas. I mean, he looked pretty good. He was up and down. I mean, it was a long year for him, but he showed flashes out in the AFL. I mean, you look at the overall line, it was, I mean, he hit 228. But, you know, I think he tailed off near the end. He had a couple, I think he had two different hot stretches, but he was an 18-year-old who already had played 111 games in the minor leagues. That's a long year for an 18-year-old, but he had six doubles and four home runs out in the AFL. So it looked pretty good. Still a little bit, had a little bit of, you know, higher, you know, strikeout rate at times out there. Got a little swing happy, but he was making good contact out there. And I've never said he wasn't good. I mean, I just thought he was way overrated. But I still think he could be a solid, you know, to maybe even above average offensive catcher. You look at, you know, he had four home runs this past year. But, you know, solid power for his age. Again, he's only 18. We got to keep, you know, factoring that in. He was 18 and playing in high A, probably be in double A for the most part next year. there's still a lot to like here. So, Chris, would you agree that, you know, I think Ethan Salas is a bit of a decent buy at this point?
Yeah, I think so. Flaws that I saw with Salas is that, honestly, he's got too good of pitch recognition, in my opinion. He was too passive. And yep. I think that that hurt him all year. After seeing him in person in the AFL for several games, like, okay, this all starts to make sense now. You know, you can see some stuff on the tape, but you really get a feel for, you know, how a hitter's picking up pitches in person, in my opinion. And that's what I saw with Salas. You look, and he ran pretty solid walk rates last year, low chase rate. I mean, the stat line, you can probably throw it out the window. Like, I don't think it matters at this point. He was 18 years old in high A. He was actually still 17 when he started the season in high A this year. So the age of a high schooler that was in high A. And yes, I know he got bumped to double in 2023. That was, you know, whatever. It was uncalled for, in my opinion, but they did it anyway. I think it may have hurt his progression a bit. I don't really care what he did last year. I'm looking at Salas moving forward, and what I saw in Salas is a really good frame. It's got projection on it. He's a good receiver. He put up some good pops. I got a couple pop times in the 1.9 to 1.95 range. It's really good for an 18-year-old. He has some juice still. I think there's enough power in the bat. Like, the EVs are fine, and the contact rates are really good. Like, Ethan Salas makes a lot of contact, and I think that's helpful. You look at the kind of profile that it is, I think that he just gets too deep into counts, and it hurts him. He's not getting in hitters' counts. I think he needs to be a little more aggressive early in counts. And if he does so, I think he's going to benefit. I think that my biggest takeaway from Ethan Salas from the AFL was that simply he is too passive, but the pitch recognition was really good. Just be a little more aggressive, and I think the results are going to come in 2025.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a nice bounce back from him. Because, yeah, the fact that he got to AA a little bit 2 years, well, I don't know if I say last year, it still technically was last year, but 2 seasons ago in end of 2023, and that he'll probably get back to that level in 2025, there's no doubt in my mind that they rushed him. I mean, there's one thing to think a guy's advanced, and he absolutely is for his age. So I think even me being more of a Salas doubter can say that he is absolutely advanced for his age, but like, they went way too far with that. Like, double A at 17, I mean, that was a fun story, and I think definitely fueled a good amount of his, you know, being overranked for fantasy purposes. But that was just way too much for a 17-year-old, and it obviously showed. You know, I think it set him back a little bit, but the fact that he's still so young, and he'll be 19 next season. You know, he's still way ahead of most every catcher's, you know, catching prospect's pace that we've seen in terms of development and where he is. He'll still be 19 in double A, is still really, really good, and probably line him up for, you know, a 2026 debut. I don't think he debuts next year, even though he's getting drafted, I've seen in some early NFBC drafts. I don't know why. I highly doubt he debuts next year, but more of a 2026 guy. But yeah, I think he's a good buy right now. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a standout offensively, but this is a guy, you know, given, you know, his defense and his pitch recognition, you know, given, you know, the bat, I think he's going to be a decent, you know, catcher for a long time, and maybe a guy that wins a Gold Glove or two along the way. So I think he's actually a decent buy right now. Next up here, we had a lot of Kansas City Royals in this range here. We got Blake Mitchell, we got Carter Jensen, and we got Ramon Ramirez. Chris, obviously, there's only one catching spot on the diamond. So, I mean, all three of these guys have their intrigue, and we'll get into one more specifically later on in the episode. But how do you think this all plays out? I mean, obviously, maybe they get traded at some point, but who do you think, if you had to bet on one of these three being the catcher for Kansas City long-term, who do you think it's going to be?
It's a great question. I wish I had a good answer for that, because I've seen a lot of Jensen and Mitchell at this point, and there's some good and bad for both behind the plate, in my opinion. Mitchell is a really good athlete, really good mover, and ultimately his arm was weird. He's got a big arm. His pop times are good, but he was just not accurate in the second half of the season. And it showed he threw out just 15% of batters. Last year, 14% actually, because he didn't, it was 0 for 3 in high A at the end of the year. So, like, that was concerning. But I know the traits are there for Blake Mitchell, I think, to stick behind the plate, just given that he has the arm, he's got the athleticism, he's got the pop. You look at Carter Jensen. He is in a similar mold, but he threw out 26% of base runners last year in high A and double A. Now, he is older, he's a little more advanced, but he was 20 to begin the year, so not all that much younger than Blake Mitchell when we think about it, considering Mitchell turned 20 in August. So it's just over a year apart, even though Carter Jensen was drafted in 2021. Blake Mitchell, a little bit of an older prep draftee back in 2023. Aside that to say, Ramon Ramirez, I've not seen his defense yet. He's just been at the complex. He should be in Columbia this year, so I should get some pretty extended looks at him, and we'll get a better feel, because it's hard to say. Like, without having anybody that's seen him at the complex or got pop times on him, he threw out 15% of runners at the complex, if that tells you anything. So I would say that I'd count more on Jensen or Mitchell. I think they're both going to continue to develop as catchers. The bat on all these guys are really, really good. I've long been a big Carter Jensen fan. I think he's one of the more underrated catching prospects in baseball. At this point, he just doesn't get talked about. And Blake Mitchell had a phenomenal first full season where he showed good power. He actually showed really good in zone contact skills and super low chase rate. Yeah, you look at the .238 batting average, it's like, he struck out a lot. But it's another case where Blake Mitchell's kind of passive, like I was talking about with Salas, got into some pitcher counts, and he struck out a lot. But the in zone contact rates impressed me. The chase rate was about 20%. That's really good. And there was some serious juice in Blake Mitchell's bat. So both these guys are going to be a lot of fun to see. And whoever Ramirez plays, I'll talk more about him later, but I think that's a pretty special bat itself. So the Royals are certainly cooking something in the minor league. So yeah, I really like what they're doing there across the board, but especially that catcher position.
Yeah, and all these guys are good athletes too. So if they want to potentially move them, one of them out from behind the plate, I think they probably could, whether it be the first base, maybe a corner outfield spot. We shall see, but I don't know. Maybe they do a kind of like a tandem with Jensen and Mitchell. I can make a case, like you said, for both those guys. They're both pretty good catchers, outside of their offensive abilities. I think if I had to pick one, I'm a little higher on Jensen sticking behind there, but I could make a case for both those guys. So it's a good problem to have. I mean, Kansas City, they just got Jonathan India. They had a pretty good year in 2024, and they got some pieces there. Some, obviously with Bobby Witt and Vinny Pasquantino, decent pitching staff. They're kind of building something decent there in Kansas City. And I think once you get, obviously they still got Salvador Perez cranking, but he's getting a little older and not going to be, obviously not catching much long term. So these guys are, one of these guys or multiple of these guys are the future. And, yeah, I think that's all three are pretty good targets in dynasty formats, because I think all three aren't really given their due. I mean, I wouldn't say they're, fully underrated, but I don't think any of them will cost you a whole heck of a lot to go out and acquire in a dynasty league. So I think all three of them are pretty solid values right now. Let's go over to one guy that did debut in 2024, and that's Adrian Del Castillo with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Came up a little bit when Moreno, I think Moreno might have been out at that point in time. I can't remember if Moreno was on the IL, but he had 87 plate appearances, got sent back down, but he was pretty good. He started off on fire, then he cooled off, but overall in 87 plate appearances, 313, 368, 525, had four home runs, but also struck out 32.2% of the time. This is a guy that absolutely mashed in AAA. But again, this is at Reno, which is a very, very, very hitter-friendly environment. Overall, 312, 399, 603 slash line in 105 games, 36 doubles, 26 home runs, 55 walks to 80 strikeouts. But the home road splits, while he was better at home, sure, he still slashed 289, 362, 551 on the road. But again, the entire PCL is hitter friendly, so take that with a grain of salt. But some of the metrics under the hood with Del Castillo were pretty solid, though. You look at, he had a contact rate around 76%, average EV a tick over 90 miles an hour, hard hit rate 47%, barrel rate 11%. That was in AAA. Still had an 11% barrel rate in the majors as well. Hard hit rate about 34.5%. But you know, there are some, you know, intriguing qualities in Del Castillo's, you know, profile. He's a little older. Gabriel Moreno's there, obviously. Kind of where does he fit in long term? Taking all this, Chris, how do you value a guy like Del Castillo? Is he a guy you'd be looking to target, or what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I think that he's still kind of undervalued, and yeah, I think I was a little bit guilty of that too, where of course he had a good year, but it's like, okay, how sustainable is this? But you look back and it's like, okay, I mean, this is a guy that he was once talked about as maybe the top college prospect in his draft class before kind of a little bit of a down junior year led to him to fall a little bit. And I think the Diamondbacks got a pretty big steal on him, honestly. Big breakout, obviously, at 26 homers in AAA, a 30 on the year between the majors, OPS north of 1,000. Yeah, strong EVs, 90-mile-an-hour average, 105, 90th, with pretty good contact, too, and a modest chase rate. So, yeah, I think Adrian Del Castillo does check a lot of boxes that you want to see in a hitter. Maybe just a little bit of a late-blooming one, but he's not even that old. I think that there's more of an opening now for him. Christian Walker, I'm assuming, is not back. I feel like he's going to get too big of a contract. He's probably not going to be back. And, you know, there's an opening. I know Pavin Smith is kind of penciled in at first base, but I could see Del Castillo getting reps there and maybe still catching every now and then, which would be good. We want him to keep that catcher eligibility if he can. They've got Gabby Moreno. They've got Jose Herrera also on the bench. But I do think that having Del Castillo's bat in the lineup will be pretty substantial for the Diamondbacks in 2025, especially with the loss of Walker, assuming he doesn't come back, because we know that Walker was a big power bat in the middle of that lineup, and Del Castillo can certainly replicate that, in my opinion. And I think that this is just a hitter that I'm a little bit shocked he didn't get more reps in the majors. He did strike out more than we wanted to see, but I'd expect that to come down with time. I love the profile with Adrian Del Castillo, and I think that he could be primed for a pretty good year.
Yeah, I do as well. I think, you know, he's still underrated a good amount. And you mentioned you were guilty of that. I was guilty of that, too. But yeah, he had a really good year. And no, it was inflated a bit by Reno and the PCL in general. And as I mentioned, the metrics were pretty good under the hood as well. Is he going to be a guy that hits 280? No. But could he be, you know, 250? Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's 20-plus home runs in the bat. And I think that power is absolutely there. And, you know, I was kind of looking. I don't think he played at all at first base, which was kind of interesting. I thought he might have gotten a little bit of time there, but now he was either catcher and then he had some DH, and, you know, here and there a couple times a week. But I want to see if Walker does not, you know, come back, which I agree. I think Walker goes to the Yankees, you know, sweet, but we'll see where he ends up. But if that is the case and Walker's not back, do they go with a Pavin Smith for the entire year? I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I would love to say, oh, be a platoon, but they're both lefties, Smith and Del Castillo, so that wouldn't exactly work. So not really sure how that plays out, but I do think he's, you know, in the major leagues for the vast majority of 2025. Just a matter of, you know, where, you know, how much did he catch? Does he play at first base at all? You know, is there some DH in there? You know, Gurriel is kind of their DH right now. But still don't know how many plate appearances he'll get, but I do think Castillo is a solid buy as well, because I think the perceived value is still a little bit on the lower side. But before we get into our breakout picks, that's what we're doing to end every prospect segment here, or prospect show this offseason. We'll do our breakout pick at each position, which we did last year. Always a lot of fun. Let's just look at our entire top 25 here, Chris, real quick. And see, you know, who we think of all these guys, or who's in the major leagues this upcoming year. I mean, I think it's easy to say that, you know, obviously Basayo and Rushing are up in some capacity. How much, we don't know. I mean, I think out of my top 10, I think Ramirez is in there for Miami a good bit. Teal, obviously, with the Red Sox. Pretty sure, but Ballesteros debut. So my entire top five, I think, will. Same with Baldwin. Owen Ford. Nolan Tait. You probably see both of the K-Rows. Probably not Lorenzo. No, not. I don't think any of the Kansas City guys. But you see Del Castillo, so I could see that's what, 6, 7, 8, 9 with Del Castillo. Dingler's already debuted, so he's 10. Probably at least 10 of these guys, I think, at least out of my top 25. What are your thoughts here on who do you think we could see debut?
Yeah, I mean, Basayo rushing, I think Ballesteros debuts, Teal debuts, Baldwin. So that's 5 of the top 6. Lorenzo's probably my only one that doesn't. Both Caros, Ramirez, Del Castillo, obviously. I think that, you know, obviously, Dingler, you mentioned, he's already debuted. I think Jimmy Crooks debuts with the Cardinals later in the year. Crooks, I think, is just massively underrated. His data plus the ability behind the plate, it's absurd. They've just got a really crowded situation. Cooper Engle might. I could see him potentially getting some reps late in the year. I think that maybe Joe Mack. That would be interesting with the Marlins. He had a phenomenal year in AA. So that wouldn't be shocking either. So I could see that certainly working out. Yeah, I think there's certainly a good group of guys, and the catcher position's in really good hands moving forward.
I really hope that Joe Mack's walkout song is Return of the Mac. I mean, if that was my name, I'd definitely have it be Return of the Mac. But you just talked about, you know, sometimes we kind of change our ranking or, you know, just on the fly here. You know, Jimmy Crooks is one that I definitely have underranked. I got to go back and kind of look into. Whereas I think I had Crooks as like one of my first out of this top 25. I think I had him like 27th at this position, but I definitely need to move him up higher because, yeah, he's definitely a fun catching prospect as well. St. Louis has a lot. You know, we talk about Kansas City. St. Louis has done well developing catchers as well. Ivan Herrera, who I think is pretty good for this year as well. But it's time to close out the show with our breakout picks. This is from outside of our top 10. A guy that we think will move up rankings a decent bit in 2025. Already alluded to who Chris's is, but Chris, who is that guy for you?
Yeah, Ramon Ramirez is definitely my pick. You know, he put up some absurd DSL data, which kind of put him on my radar. And he came stateside, and while it wasn't as standout of a year as his DSL numbers in 2023, where he had a 1055 OPS, the numbers in the complex were really good for Ramon Ramirez. He's young. He's still 19, and he'll be 19 until mid-June next year. So he'll spend the first half of the season, almost the first half of the season, as a 19-year-old, probably in single A with the Columbia Fireflies. So I'll get some extended looks at him, you know, probably for the whole year, I'd guess. But we're looking at somebody last year who hit 265. Okay, like, let's take batting average and throw it out the window, because I'll talk more about the contact skills in a minute, but a 380 OBP, which is encouraging, and a 459 slug, 7 homers, 10 doubles, and a triple. But under the hood, you look at Ramon Ramirez, and it's like, all right, there's a lot to like with this guy, and there kind of always has been. His 9th percentile EV was almost at 105 miles an hour, which is very impressive for a 19-year-old. MLB average is like 103. And a half or so for reference. So Ramirez is already, you know, a solid tick or so above MLB average at 19. You look at the contact rates, very good. He had an end zone contact rate around 87%. That'll absolutely play. You'd love to see that. And he's hyper aggressive in the zone too, which is good. I love to see the higher end zone swing rates paired with good end zone contact. I think that speaks a lot of volume. He doesn't chase, as shown by the walk rate and his high OBP. We're looking at, you know, 26% chase rate. That's really solid. So I think Ramirez is kind of just this well-rounded profile where the bat's going to absolutely play. You're going to get power. The EVs are there. There's good in-zone contact skills. I think he's just going to go beat up on single-A pitching. Pitching in the Carolinas League is honestly not all that great for the most part. You get every staff has probably one really good arm, but I think he stands a really good chance to go and just mash in single A, put up some really good home run numbers. He hits the ball at ideal angles, high X Wobicon. Man, I think Ramon Ramirez is in for maybe another breakout in 2025 in his full season debut, just given the combo of everything that he brings to the table. Kind of already mentioned the catching ability. It's fine. I'd love to see some progress this offseason, see him throw out some more runners. We will see. But this bat is exceptional. So Ramon Ramirez is the guy that I think vaults in the top 10 next year at this position.
Yeah, Ramirez is a guy I've been pretty high on as well. And one I was thinking about to pick here, I will go to the other Central Division in the National League Central and go to Cincinnati with Alfredo Duno. who was limited to just 32 games, unfortunately. Had a broken rib in late May, which ended his season, but played 32 games as an 18-year-old, low A Daytona, slash 267, 367, 422, three home runs, seven doubles in those 32 games. So performed pretty well. Still has a bit of a higher strikeout rate than we'd like to see. Had 40 strikeouts in 32 games, but still walks a good amount as well. Walk rate well over 10% both this past year and the previous year, 2023, in the DSL. And they brought him to low A in 2024. So this guy would probably be ranked a little bit higher if he didn't miss the entire season. But looked pretty good in his limited time. Had a 88.5 mile an hour average exit velocity, 44.5% hard hit rate, 8.5% barrel rate. Again, as an 18-year-old, pretty solid power for his age. And that's where he's really kind of projected to stand out, is with that power. He's got a really strong frame. Like, he does not look 18. If you saw Alfredo Duno, you'd probably think, oh, he's 21. I mean, this is a very, big, in a good way, frame. He's very strong. Lower half, especially, has a lot of strength in those legs. So I think he's a big guy that really does stand out in the power department. And he's going to have, assuming he stays with the Cincinnati Reds, he's going to have a phenomenal home ballpark to hit in. There are some concerns about just the hit tool in general. As I mentioned, the K rate has been a little higher than you'd like to see. The K rate's a little lower than you'd like to see. He's sub 70% contact as of now. But again, we're looking at not a very large sample size at all. I mean, again, he had 32 games this year, 45 last year, so only 77 games under his belt in the minor leagues. But the bat, potentially, especially in the power department, could be really good if he can make enough contact. I like the ability to get on base and the fact that he was still walking a high clip in low A, and this wasn't just a higher walk rate product of the DSL. It's always encouraging to see some of those metrics, some of those abilities translate over into full season ball. Gives you kind of confidence that it wasn't just a fluky thing because of, DSL pitching not being great at all. Again, really this, the X factor here is going to be, how much contact does he make? Can he keep that K rate in check? Because even if he can get like a fringe average hit tool guy, the BABIP boost that he'll probably get from Free American Ballpark, keep that average respectable, he'll probably do a decent OBP to go along with it, and potentially 20-plus home runs as well. So I think once he gets a full season under his belt, hopefully no more injuries hinder him next year, I think Duno could be a nice rankings riser in 2025. But that is going to wrap us up the catcher prospect part, kind of kicking off our 2025 ranking series. We'll be back with you again later this week to go over dynasty catchers. But until then, everyone take care.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.